Welcome back to Boston Public Radio and one of our favorite segments. I'm Jim Browder. She's Marjorie Egan. Here with us in Studio 3 for our monthly concert roundtable are Rob Hochschild. He's the Director of Communications at Berklee College of Music. Hey there, Rob.
Hi, everyone.
Brian McCreath is the host with 99.5 WCRB and producer of the Boston Symphony Orchestra radio broadcast. And Marjorie and I are going in mid-November, Brian.
Know.
As you know,
Excite.
We're very excited.
Looking forward to that.
And Edgar B. Herrick III, the man behind WGBH's Curiosity Desk. Hello, Edgar.
Hello, hello.
And to you. So where do we start?
Yeah, who's going to start?
Let's stop.
Edgar,
these guys both
okay.
have four picks. I only have three.
Okay,
so
we'll start. We'll start with you, Edgar.
Fair enough. All right. So the theme today for my concert picks is a journey through the decades. We're going to have an artist from the 70s, from the 80s, from the 90s, and from the 2000s.
Ooh, I like that.
So I think we'll start in the 70s.
Okay.
We're going to go back to the 70s. While this guy's still operating now, probably had his peak in the 70s in terms of being a singer songwriter, and this is the vaunted artist Randy Newman.
Oh, gosh.
Total genius.
How
oh,
good
wow.
is this guy,
oh,
right?
My God.
So,
so funny.
Yeah, I mean, what's really interesting about Randy Newman is I think he's probably more known to people now than they realize. He's recently done the music for a ton of these Disney Pixar movies, right? Cars and Toy Story and Monsters, Inc. He's also written some 25, 30 film scores, right? So he's been – and he has the interesting distinction of being the person who had the most Academy Award nominations before ever winning.
I actually knew that. That's
15
right.
15 times wow. he was nominated for Academy Awards for his music before he ever won. And he did, you know, not only just
music.
What
did he win for? What did he win for?
He won for one of his songs
Disney
for
thing.
Monster, Inc. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's the first time. But he also does scores in addition to songs, right? So he did the score for Awakenings, The Natural, Seabiscuit. Mm. So,
really?
Yeah. Totally. But on it.
Not just
Absolutely.
Really, but totally.
He did the total score, the beginning and the end, yeah. But, you know, his roots are in the 70s as a singer-songwriter, first as a writer of music for all kinds of artists, and then in his own right. So I want to go back and listen to one of his tunes from the 70s just to remind people who Randy Newman is and what he sounds like. This is one of my favorite Randy Newman songs, Lonely at the Top.
I've been around the world, had my pick of any girl. You'd think I'd be happy, but I'm not. Everybody knows my name.
You know, one of the things I love about Randy Newman, he looks exactly like he sounds.
Yes,
does
exactly.
he not?
Exactly. Grumpy, disheveled, gray-haired, big glasses, you know what I mean?
When's he coming to town?
He's coming to town November 19th. He's playing at the Wilbur. I think that's going to be a great show. He's like famous, you know, in concert for sometimes being very rumpled and grumpy, but he always performs really well. Another interesting thing about him, do you know who he cites as his single most important influence?
No.
Ray Charles.
Wow.
Really?
And you can hear it in the way he sings. You can hear that sort of affect where you get that sense of Ray Charles was huge for him. But, he is the quintessential American songwriter.
Can I just jump in here? Because there's actually a deeper root to Randy Newman than what you mentioned. You talk about his roots in the 70s and with Ray Charles.
Sure.
But Randy Newman comes from a Hollywood dynasty.
Yeah.
So
he
Alfred,
does?
Alfred Newman and Emil Newman.
Oh, from Mad Magazine, sure.
These were film composers of the early decades of sound movies, and their family has continued along in this vein. I talked to Randy Newman's cousin, David Newman, when he was here in Boston to conduct the BSO in West Side Story. And this is a family that grew up in one of the most exciting, vibrant places you could possibly be in for music, and that's why he soaks in Ray Charles and film music. It all comes in because in Los Angeles, if you're working in the movie business, you do soak in everything, and then if you're good, you get that back out into movies or on the stage. Like
so,
Randy
Brian McGree, since you butted in right in the middle of Edgar B. Herrick,
exactly.
Why don't you give us your first selection?
I know. So my theme is a journey through the centuries.
Ooh. Yeah, that's
sorry.
It.
Very good.
Sorry, that's just
I'm doing decades.
I'm doing decades, and of course, McGree comes into one up with, I'm doing centuries.
I'll get to millennia next time. Okay, so I am very excited because it's not, you know, I feel like a bit of a one-trick pony. I come in here and talk about how great the BSO is a lot because it is a world-class orchestra, one of many world-class organizations in Boston. But I am extremely excited that in the next few weeks, two other world-class orchestras are going to be visiting Symphony Hall, and they're two of my favorite orchestras. The Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra will be coming in on, let's see, that's November 7th. And then just 9 days later, the San Francisco Symphony is going to be visiting Symphony Hall. What I love about these two programs is that they both reflect the roots of these orchestras. So the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, literally the oldest continually operating orchestra in the world.
Since when?
Since the days of about 1730, that's how they trace their roots back to what's called the Collegium Musicum, which Bach ran. Okay? So this organization comes directly out of those roots. And
Edgar,
still
eat
operating.
Your heart out,
I'm sitting
baby.
Here. I'll tell you. I'm like, well, Newman really started in the 60s. I mean, he was known in the 70s, but he started in the 60s.
Sorry, wait, Brian.
Were all the modern instruments that are in a symphony
they have survived as an organization, thrived as an organization through the evolution of the orchestra itself. And one of their conductors during the 1830s, I believe it was, could be 1820s, was Felix Mendelssohn, one of the great composers.
Oh,
they will be playing music by Mendelssohn at Symphony Hall, the Reformation Symphony and the Hebrides Overture. So I'm extremely excited just to hear them do music of their own place. But I'm also excited because just whether you knew anything about their history or not, their sound is so unique. So let's just listen to a little bit. This is Brahms, which is their most recent recording. Let's just listen to a little bit of the Brahms Symphony No. 4. If we were going to A, B recordings, which probably don't have time for right now, we would hear in other orchestras, maybe even the BSO, a little bit more of a lush sound, a little bit more of a thick texture. In the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, there's a transparency that I've never heard in any other orchestra. I've heard them in Leipzig, I've heard them in Symphony Hall before, and I love the way this orchestra plays.
When you say transparency, what do you mean?
I mean that you can see straight through all the lines that are coming off the stage. You can see through them in a way that is different from the kind of blend that the Boston Symphony gets. The Boston Symphony has a beautiful, beautiful blend, but it's like you're tasting wine. Sorry to get extra snobby on you, but it's like you're tasting wine, and some wines come at you as a full force blend, and other wines you just separate those flavors instantly, and that's how Leipzig is.
Now, hold on for 1 second. Yeah. What instruments were not here in 1730?
You're going back to this.
was the piano?
Okay, so
here?
Trumpets didn't have valves.
Really?
Trombones weren't even actually used in orchestras until Beethoven.
And what about the piano?
The piano was not even the piano in 1730.
Still the harpsichord.
It was still the harpsichord. Yeah. Just now getting into the forte piano, which was an early version of what we now know as the piano.
Okay.
By the way, have you ever seen anybody dance to Brahms before Marjorie just did? I'm serious.
Actually, yeah.
This is all you have?
No, Brahms is filled with dancing. Fine. It is just brilliant music. So I love that about the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra. And then when San Francisco comes in, they're actually reflecting their own hometown as well, because they have music by a composer named Samuel Carl Adams, who has written a piece that he's a composer about 28, 29 years old right now, living in San Francisco, and they're bringing along one of his pieces because Michael Tilson Thomas is someone who has done his best to reflect the culture of the West Coast. And this is what they're going to be reflecting in the concert they'll play at Symphony Hall. So that's on November 16th and Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra on the 7th.
So it's our monthly concert roundtable. Who would be next, Marjorie?
Rob Hochschild from Berkeley would be next with a little bit of jazz. Please tell us about it.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I have no theme here. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So I'm going to do my best. I'm going to say one word right now that you don't normally hear from the jazz guy, and that word is Beyonce.
Mm. Yes.
Oh. So now the reason
now
why.
We call her BK, by the way. So go ahead. Bay
okay. Bay. All right. Good to know. Well, the artist that I'm going to tell you about is named Tia Fuller, and she's an alto saxophonist and soprano player and a flute player, and she toured with Beyonce for years. So she provided these moments in the middle of Beyonce concerts, which I have to admit, I have not yet been to one. Perhaps one of you have, but there is a moment when a saxophonist stands and plays this incredible interlude, and it's been a big moment in a lot of Beyonce shows for years. So but this was a jazz saxophonist who, born and bred and in the New York scene. She's from Colorado. Now teaches at Berkeley, but she's a band leader and a composer and an amazing saxophonist. And she's actually learned a lot about being a jazz player from her Beyoncé experience. And that is like how to really connect with an audience. One problem a lot of jazz musicians have, I suppose, in a way, is that their music is sort of delivered from on high and it's hard to sort of comprehend. So some people say, I don't necessarily feel that way. But this is somebody who really learned through these Beyoncé experiences how to really connect with an audience and also what the importance of freedom in jazz is. So let's listen to a little bit of T.O. Fuller. It's a tune called Angelic Warrior. Hard to imagine that being played at a Beyoncé concert.
It is hard to imagine. You know, how unusual are female saxophone, alto saxophone players?
Less and less unusual all the time. You know, I think 20, 30, in Randy Newman's 70s or 60s, it was probably very unusual. You know, these days it's happening a lot more, and artists like T.O. Fuller demand to be taken seriously, you know, and there has been a long-term sort of chauvinism in jazz music, I think, and I think that's really changing. And there's, you know, you got Esperanza Spalding, and you've got Tia, Terry Lynn Carrington as a drummer on this track.
And Grace Kelly.
Grace Kelly's another one.
Local kid for Brookline, yes?
Exactly.
No?
Yeah. Yes.
When did the saxophone enter the orchestra?
It was not
Adolf
in the 1730s, okay? This is coming along much later than
1800s.
That.
1800s.
You know how competitive this has grown over the months we've been doing this, gentlemen. It's a whole different experience.
It's a smackdown.
Yeah.
Rob, thank you. We're back to you, Edgar, for round two. What decade are we coming
We're going
from?
To the 80s.
80s, perfect.
Let's go to the 80s, and one of my favorite bands from the 80s, The Pretenders. Let's hear a little.
I found a picture of you.
Oh,
my God. What hijacked my world at night.
Yep.
One of my all-time favorite songs.
I mean, this song is so good. 1982. The Pretenders, of course, is essentially Chrissie Hynde. She's the voice you're hearing here. And for my money, you can't get a better female vocalist than Chrissie Hynde in like rock music. What I think is really interesting about her is that, you know, she was American-born, and then she went to London and was really like caught up in the early punk scene in London. And she's one of these artists, and there's a few of them in the 80s, but I think the Pretenders are a really good example of this, is that I think that the punk scene, both in America and in London in the 70s and 80s, it was high on spirit, and I really love the spirit of punk music, but maybe their musical chops didn't always match the spirit and the energy of the music, and that's part of the charm of punk music, but there were a handful of bands. I think of the Talking Heads as one here in America that sort of grow out of the punk movement, but have these musical chops that are maybe a little bit more digestible, and did a good job through the 80s of like making really interesting music that has the spirit of punk but has sort of a different thing going on. So she's coming to town. Interestingly enough, The Pretenders, which was a rotating cast of musicians over the course of years, she always recorded under the name The Pretenders, but it was essentially her. She recently released her first solo album under the name Chrissie Hynde. So she's going to be playing on November 1st at the Orpheum. She's going to be playing the music of The Pretenders and music from her new record. And like I said, I mean, I would go on a date with Chrissie Hynde now in a second if I could. I mean, I could listen to her sing all day.
You know, you mentioned the Talking Heads a minute ago, and I'm always looking for great concert movies. What's the name of the great Talking Heads concert?
Stop Making Sense.
Isn't that one of the great? Absolutely
one of the greatest.
Is David Byrne still around performing?
Yeah.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he got really interested in like, you know, the Brazilian music of the 60s and 70s and like South American music. I mean, he really explored into the world music place. And then he also still pushes into like electronica. And I mean, he's doing interesting stuff still.
That's great.
Yeah. Chrissie Hynde's voice is still really good then.
You know what? It's really interesting. I was reading a review of her solo record, which I listened through, and it's good. The songs are good. But one of the things one of these reviewers said, which I think was spot on, is that the producer did a very smart thing, and he kept her voice really high in the mix, recognizing that the thing that makes her great is her voice, and her voice still sounds unbelievable.
You know what?
Unbelievable. I love that.
Thing, Edgar,
I love
you're
that.
Talking about the punk bands that kind of didn't have a lot of musical chops and had all the energy.
Yeah.
There's a lot about technique that preserves your voice. David Byrne is someone who has great singing technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His voice sounds great. Chrissie Hynde just knows how to sing.
Totally.
So that voice is preserved over however many years.
Okay. You know, I interject something here, and you're all going to cringe when I say this, but I'll say it anyway.
Good intro, Marjorie.
Well, We did a thing about Barbara Streisand being on with
Jimmy Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, yeah.
Barbara Streisand is going to be 70 years old.
She is 70, I think.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't know if anybody's going to cringe, but I thought she sounded
brilliant.
Unbelievable.
When he would allow her to sing.
Yeah, he kind of sang over her all the time, but I thought, wow. Yeah. Because that's unusual, is it not, to be able to sing at that age?
I think to Brian's point, it really depends on your technique and how well you're taking care of your instrument through the years. I think you see some people whose voice gets destroyed over time. You know, Bob Dylan or Tom Waits.
Joni Mitchell's voice.
Joni Mitchell.
Yeah. Don't even say that.
She smoked.
Yeah. That was.
And so did Frank Sinatra smoke.
So,
I wondered if it was the smoking or the aging.
Oh, you know that.
If you don't smoke. And you don't smoke too much weed, maybe when you're 70.
Yeah, who knows? Interesting thing about Chrissie Hynde, she had a daughter with Ray Davies from the Kinks, mm-hmm. right? They have a daughter. I just recently saw that their daughter was protesting fracking in London, right? And so some people chain themselves to something or whatever. She and the guy that she was with super glued themselves together. this is not a joke. They literally super glued themselves together in front of
That's
like a
great.
Fracking
But so
area
why would the cops want to stop that? I mean, who cares? Let them.
I don't know.
That
I
is mean, pretty that good.
Super
it hurts,
glued.
Though.
That's amazing.
Okay, Brian McCreath, round two for you, my friend.
Well, I mentioned centuries before, so actually let's just deal with that concept. Let's go ahead and listen to some music here that's sung by Blue Heron.
It's coming.
It's coming.
Talk about technique.
I was going to say, you have to take care of your voice in a different way.
Jeez.
So we've talked about Blue Heron on this program
this is
before.
Unbelievable.
I'm going beautiful. This weekend.
They are a world-class Renaissance choir, right?
Ah.
Here's what's really fun. They've got a special event coming up, and it's on November 15th. It's called Capturing Music. They've decided to team up with a friend of mine teaches at Harvard named Thomas Forrest Kelly. He's a musicologist, but he writes books that are just absolutely brilliant about music history. The biggest splash he made was with a book he wrote called First Nights, which tells the story literally of five world premieres that changed the world. That's fun. But his new book is literally about how people started writing down music. It's about the language of music. And so it's a multimedia presentation where Blue Heron will sing music. This is from the 12th century. This is from a composer, the first one who ever thought that you could have two different lines going on at the same time. Composer named Leo Nan, and so Blue Heron will be along with Thomas Forrest Kelly to demonstrate a lot of this ancient music and how it is that before any recordings existed, before anyone could do anything other than oral tradition, how music was able to be preserved, passed along, and performed in countless places because then people could read music.
You know, Marjorie and I are preparing this weekend for our Tuesday night gubernatorial debate, and Marjorie sheepishly says to me this morning, I can meet any time this weekend, except when did you say?
8 o'clock Saturday night.
And she says, you're not going to like why it is that I can't meet. Why can't you meet Saturday night?
Because I'm going to go see them perform.
That's
nice.
Great.
I love that sort of medieval Renaissance.
It's entrancing. And so there's never a reason not to go to a Blue Heron concert. But I think in this case, there's this extra multimedia kind of intellectual fascination with what Tom Kelly's going to talk about in terms of what the language of music actually is.
So we're down to two for each of our participants because you came one short today, Rob. So you know what we'll do?
It's okay.
We'll take a break. When we come back, round three, well, sort of two and a half for Rob. Round three of our concert roundtable. Don't go away.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. If you are just tuning in, we were reviewing concerts in the area covering all genres of music, classical, jazz, alternative. We're joined by Rob Hochschiel, Director of Communications at Berklee College of Music, Brian McCreath, who's down the hall with 99.5 WCRB and a producer for the Boston Symphony Orchestra radio broadcast, and Edgar B. Herwig III, who sits next to me, who's with WGBH's Curiosity Desk. Thank you all for coming in. I forget whose tune.
It's Rob.
I think we're over to Rob.
Okay, over to Rob.
Hello.
Okay, Rob, thank you very much. Go ahead.
Thank you, Marjorie.
You're
one
welcome.
Thing I neglected to mention when I was talking during the first set about Tia Fuller, I didn't say where or when she was playing.
Mm. Oh.
She's playing November 5th at Scullers. Great place to see a show. So that's Tia Fuller.
And by the way, we post all this on our website after the show. So for those who are driving or worried they missed something, all of the performances, the dates, the times will be posted. I'm sorry, Rob.
Cool. So I'll start with the date and time of this one. It's tomorrow night at Northeastern University's Blackman Auditorium. It's the John Coltrane Memorial Concert, and this is a big annual show for Northeastern, and Berklee gets involved with it too, and musicians from all over the country get involved in it, and every year they pay homage to one of the greatest jazz artists ever, musicians of the 20th century, really great composer, saxophone player. And what their theme, they have a theme on their concert this year. It's A Love Supreme, which is, this is the 50th anniversary of A Love Supreme, which was John Coltrane's quintessential, like, spiritual jazz album of, it came out in 64. His classic quartet played on it. And this was really his attempt to, you know, speak his gratitude and quest for purity. And it's really a beautiful album in four movements. So they're going to do this ensemble of Boston-based musicians and one guest artist, Donald Harrison. And so what we're going to listen to right now is a piece of another John Coltrane Memorial Concert, and it's a Coltrane composition that's actually not on Love Supreme, but it gets at what he's doing in that album. It's called Dear Lord. So if we had, like, 8 minutes. Yeah, I know. It's very relaxing.
Yeah, breathing with
it. Yeah, it just draws you right in. You're just, like, laying inside of it, just covered in it.
Oh, yeah. It's a big jazzy blanket, yes.
Yeah. Sorry. What's his name again?
John Coltrane?
No, the guy who's playing right
okay,
now.
Okay, that saxophonist is Bill Pierce.
Okay.
And that was the 2009 concert. Unfortunately, Bill Pierce is not on the bill for this concert. There are other great saxophonists like Carl Atkins, Leonard Brown, and Donald Harrison's the big guest artist. Bill Pierce is over at Berklee, and he really embodies that Coltrane sound in a great way.
Oh,
and this is just beautiful. And it's great that it's still going in the background. This just keeps going, and it intensifies and it deepens. And I really think this is a special concert. I've been to it a bunch of times. And you really get immersed in one artist's sort of compositional path and his message. And it's really, I really recommend this one a lot tomorrow night.
You know, beyond the you know, sort of theme of A Love Supreme, which is, you know, a big thing, and it's part of why the album's so great. Like, from a musical standpoint, what is it that makes that album so special?
Oh, man. Well, it's sort of like what we heard a little bit of in the beginning of this tune. It's sort of it's like a classical composition in a way.
It's much more organized than a lot of sort of typical jazz tunes that you normally would have, which is chorus, improvisation, or whatever. There's a lot more structure to this.
It's a four part arrangement. It's about a 35 or 40 minute long album, and each segment of it sort of refers back to something earlier. There's an improvisational part of everyone. And I think, you know, it just sort of hangs as a full statement. Harmonically, I think there's a lot of modal structure in the composition, but I'm not really positive about it. It certainly feels that way because of that floating feeling in a lot of his work of the mid-60s and early 60s was modal, and that's why it kind of feels that way. So, and also just the sound of John Coltrane that Bill Pierce just embodied so well. It's big and it's beautiful.
And you're listening to our monthly concert roundtable.
Monthly.
Brian McCreath, I'm sorry.
Concert
what are you saying?
Table.
Thank you,
Mark. I just wanted to jump in and say that Eric Jackson will be there.
Eric Jackson, that's
right. 89.7.
Who's got one of the great voices of all time.
Not to mention unbelievable knowledge and feel for jazz.
But just to hear him talk.
Yeah. Edgar, all three of you guys, we got to pick up the pace of drop because we want to get as much in as we possibly can.
All
Edgar,
right.
Take it away.
Let's do it. I'm just going to set up my tune and then have our producers play the John Coltrane again instead. So you got that in the control room? No. So we're moving on to the 90s and a band called the Jayhawks, who are one of these bands that they actually got started in the mid-80s in Minneapolis. They've been making music ever since then. Never to great success. They never really had anything that charted big time. But they were part of a movement in the sort of late 80s and into the early and mid 90s that was pretty popular in Minneapolis, which was sort of this alt-country thing where they were kind of going back to roots music and really interested in sort of more early American music, early country music, but not country music, big, glossy sort of pop country music that you hear, but the simpler kind of instruments, acoustic country roots kind of thing. And what's interesting in the scene in Minneapolis is that these bands were also equally, I think, influenced by the power pop sort of thing, like bands like, if you think of like the Replacements and Cheap Trick. So there's this interesting combination in this band, the Jayhawks, of this kind of roots thing and then also this power pop thing. If you're a fan of a band like Big Star, which was a band in the 70s, these guys kind of have that sort of a sound. And they're going around on a tour. They just re-released three of their most popular albums from the 90s. Those albums were Sound of Lies, Smile, and Rainy Day Music. They're playing a lot of songs from that sort of trio of albums, as well as things from their entire career. Apparently, these shows are really well rehearsed, really well organized, and really long. They're coming October 27th.
Really long.
They're coming October 27th to the Somerville Theater. Let's have a little listen to the Jayhawks. I think this is a song that really kind of gets at their sound. A lot of great harmonies in what they do. This song's called Stumbling Through the Dark.
The men who preceded us here left only questions and fears. The vanity formed by beauty lies. You know it's a crime.
I did not expect that sound when
yes.
you described it.
I mean,
not that you didn't describe it well. It's just that I do hear that roots, but there's something else going on with it. It's not just sort of old-time country.
No. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's also they've also got this power pop thing.
Yeah.
So these sort of principles of power pop. They've got these great harmonies.
Right.
And like I said, if you listened, and there's a certain sort of odd quality to what the Jayhawks do. There's a lot of bands that kind of exist in this mold, but the Jayhawks, for me, sort of stand in a different place because just from a musical standpoint, they have a point of view, and there's a little bit of quirk and oddity, especially into their voices
yeah.
and especially into the harmonies.
Yeah.
What century are you going to run? No, seriously, what century?
So seriously, actually, we're going to come to the current century.
Ooh, I love that.
In a certain sense, because, you know, I'm so excited. I should say, by the way, that you mentioned the other stuff on the website, the links to stuff on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say that it's always hard to do these because there's so many great things that I can't mention, can't get into. And there's a lot of other great concerts coming up that I looked at and that will be highlighted on the website. So things
Good.
Like the Lexington Symphony, the Boston Philharmonic, Chameleon Arts Ensemble, great organizations around town giving great concerts. But I'm so excited about the previous orchestras I mentioned because it gives you a chance to hear them in relation to our own world-class orchestra. And of course, the big story in town has been Andras Nelson's. He'll be in town for 3 weeks during November. And when I say current century, I mean they'll be doing a world premiere that was commissioned for Andras Nelson's coming here. A world premiere by a Latvian composer, because he's from Latvia. And so that's going to be on one of these programs that he's conducting. He'll also be conducting a piece by a Russian composer named Sofia Gubaidulina, who is still with us, and wrote this amazing mystical piece. And then he'll also be doing other things like Tchaikovsky. And let's see, Rachmaninoff, Yo-Yo Ma will be playing with. So there's a huge, I'm not going to run down the whole laundry list of pieces because it's just a bit much to absorb at one time. But I want to highlight the Sibelius Second Symphony simply because it gets in your ear this way of orchestra sounding. Let's go ahead and hear a little bit of the Sibelius II. This is the last movement in a Boston Symphony recording that's legendary now. It's with Colin Davis. And the thing about Sibelius II is that it all depends on pacing. And it depends on this gradual, inexorable buildup. So if you're in the hall, nothing comes at you in a slap at the face. It's like you're on this wave and you're just getting carried away with this sound that just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Let's go ahead and ramp it up a little bit. So there's this motion under everything.
Yeah.
And the melody is sort of circular. We're back at the beginning of it now. But it feels like we're somehow farther along than we were before. And they're adding instruments, layering on. And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And the thing about Sibelius is that the pacing is so important. It's a great test of how a conductor handles an orchestra. The biggest thing about any conductor and orchestra relationship is timing. And the sense of timing for keeping a steady beat and the sense of timing for knowing when to not keep a steady beat. And that's what's going to be really fascinating to watch with Andras and the BSO. When
Look
they
how happy
piece.
Marjorie Egan is. I mean, this is just, she is like in another place. It is so, it's great to see. It's incredible. Okay, Rob Hochschild, take it away, my friend.
All right. Well, there are two people I'm going to tell you about right now. Preston Reed and Usman Riaz. And these are two guitarists that are approach their instrument in ways that we've never heard before. There's a lot of percussive. These guys will tap on the instrument. They will pluck the strings in various locations. They have a whole different way of playing. The interesting thing is now they're playing on November 4th at the Berklee Performance Center. The way they came together was this 23-year-old Usman Riaz, who's from Pakistan, learned how to play by watching YouTube and by seeing what these great guitarists in other parts of the world played like. He watched Jimmy Page play, I believe, Braniar Stomp, which is a tune from one of the Led Zeppelin albums, and figured out how to play it. And from there, he started listening to other guitarists and eventually came across this guy, Preston Reed. And Preston Reed...
Sounds like an iPad commercial.
Right? Yeah, exactly. One thing led to another. And this guy has... not only is he a great guitar player, he also composes symphonies and he plays piano. And he is currently a Berklee student, but he's done so many things beyond that. He did a TED Talk in Scotland, and that was the first time he and his idol Preston Reed came together. They both played, and then they were interviewed. And so now they're coming together to do a full concert for the first time, November 4th at Berklee. Let's listen to a little bit of these guys from the TED Talk.
You know, the way you described him, I thought it was going to sound like Rodrigo and Gabriela.
Yeah, it's so totally.
But it's actually not.
Totally.
It's not.
But it's
really
not
the
unlike
same
it, though. I mean, it's sort of coming from a different place, but it's got that same
Why is this guy still a student, Rob? What is he a student of?
What is he? I know.
What's the point?
What does he have to learn?
I mean that sincerely.
That is a great question. I think one of the many things that people get out of going to school at Berklee is the network and meeting other musicians and other producers, business people. That's a big part of it. And also just figuring out some other stuff and going further. I mean, he's a young guy. So, I think of an album called Friday Night in San Francisco when I listen to this, which is an album from the 70s, Al Di Meola, John McLaughlin. Just virtuoso guitar players doing amazing things rhythmically and melodically. And I think that's where these guys are cool coming from. So great stuff.
Okay, an impossible task, particularly for Edgar and Brian.
Keep
you
it
have
short.
1 minute
what are you trying to
each.
Say?
All right, here we go.
1 minute, Edgar Beharick III.
So we're into the 2000s. This is a rock and roll band from Long Beach, California. Really interesting. They've just released their second album. Their first album came out about 4 or 5 years ago. When the kid was signed to Sub Pop Records, he was just 18 years old, put this first album out, which was really, really great. The second album is sort of a step in maturity. I think of this as sort of a split between, there's one part that sounds like the music of the late 90s, like a band like The Shins. And then there's this other part, because this guy is a really good guitar player, that has this Grateful Dead quality to it, which is kind of buried in the background. But while a lot of it is kind of big, rockin', kind of guitar music with strange melodies, he's got a really high voice, I've chosen a track from their new album that is a little bit more of a mature and contemplative moment that kind of indicates, a more interesting direction where this young man is going. But here's a track. The band is called Avi Buffalo, and this is a track called Overwhelmed with Pride.
Motions paint and pushing wheels, spinning through your wall. Ovaries over eggs and
yeah, hang with it for 1 second here, this beautiful kind of rising moment.
Sounds like he's walking on a cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think one reviewer said you can imagine Kermit the Frog singing this song, which is kind of funny and kind of true. But these guys are really good. They're playing November 8th at Great Scott, which is a small venue in Alston. Always a really good place to see a show with a band like this. So Avi Buffalo, I highly recommend this one. I think it's going to be a good show. They have two records, and they both are packed with really good music.
Okay, Brian McCreath, you're going to end this month's concert roundtable.
And I'll bring it full circle. Back to Hollywood.
Yes.
Eric Korngold. Composer born in Vienna, child prodigy. Mahler thought he was the best thing ever. Moved to the Hollywood
Mahler,
in 1930s.
By the way, I thought we were going to get through it.
No, no, no.
And you weren't
going to
talk about Mahler.
No, no. So he moves to Hollywood in the 1930s to escape the Anschluss. Starts writing film scores. Loves writing film scores. Still kind of pines away for a classical career. St. Lawrence String Quartet coming to the Rockport Chamber Music Organization on October 25th at the Shalindu Performance Center. They'll be playing a Korngold String Quartet. Let's hear a little bit of it. This is a piece, this is the third movement of the third string quartet by Korngold. And what's really nice about this is that he actually used music from the film score for The Sea Wolf, one of the Golden Age Hollywood films.
If only one of the Newman family had written that. Exactly. I mean, how perfect
would
that
have been? Did I say it was full circle? We're coming back to Hollywood. St. Lawrence String Quartet, one of the great quartets working right now. They're based in California. They're coming to Rockport on October 25th.
It's beautiful. Edgar B. Herrick III, Rob Hochschild, Brian McCree, thank you as always.
Our pleasure.
And we'll see you next month. This
yes,
is
we have
too.
Been. Okay, let me just say once again, Rob Hochschild is the Director of Communications for Berklee College of Music. Brian McCree is the host with 99.5 really WCRB and the producer for the Boston Symphony Orchestra radio broadcast. And Edgar B. Herrick III is with WGBH's Curiosity Desk. Thanks again for coming in.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Up next, Emily Rooney joins us for Open Mic and her famous list of obsessions and observations. That's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.